Hello there, Wandering Tech Podcast listener. It's Paul, and you join me on a windy lunchtime walk in the Dorset countryside. It's been a while, and when Lydia and I made plans to take a month off, that quickly turned into 2 months, and now, as I record this, it's Monday the 24th of February 2025, and we're heading very quickly towards March. We've been busy, is the short version, but the Wandering Tech Podcast is still here. I hope you all had a great break and have had a positive start to the new year. As we start to get our schedules realigned, Lou and I are going to be bringing you some conversations that we had towards the end of last year with some of our favourite people. This conversation today is with Rue Dickinson. Rue is the founder and CEO of Alpha GTM Training, which provides training to sales, pre-sales and go-to-market teams across the world. Rue, if you have seen him on LinkedIn, is famed for delivering remote workshops, but has also recently been spending his time at sales kickoffs, something that many of you have probably been attending. This conversation between myself and Rue was recorded towards the end of last year, 2024, and we go into a number of different things. We talk about Rue's own journey through sales and pre-sales, his starting life as a software engineer, moving into sales engineering, and then over to what is affectionately known as the dark side of direct sales before starting out his own business. What's really fascinating about this conversation with Rue is his perspective on how having done one job informed how he did another, and how being a CAN executive isn't really about selling at all. We talk about a number of things, the favourite topics of those of us in this career. Should you always have a discovery call before a demo? Should all sales engineers move into sales? And then we get into the future of the profession and the differences that the company size can make on the growth journey and the different types of roles and opportunities that are going to exist between those organisations. This was an absolutely fascinating conversation. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. And I'll be back at the end to give you a little bit more of an update about what's coming for the Wandering Tech this year. Here's Rue Dickinson.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks. How are you, sir? It's great to have you here.
Good. I'm excited. I was glad you set this up. This is going to be a fun one.
Yeah,
we're talking like this, just shooting the if you will. But this is actually for a larger audience, which is great.
It is, and I mean, I think I was thinking this morning. I was like, when did I first come across connect you? I feel like it was like 2 years ago. It was definitely TikTok. It wasn't LinkedIn. I remember being on TikTok.
Yeah, that could have been it. No, I was doing TikTok. Yeah, it might have been that. I mean, it was probably 2 years ago was when I started really getting into LinkedIn and just social media and stuff like that, but hadn't really touched it much since, or in the beginning.
Yeah. And then obviously we connected last year. I'm sorry I missed you in London. I had to apologize to other people that I missed them in London. I will be there next time. But I hear that I missed out on free beer as well. So that, you know.
You know, I had the 4 o'clock session. I had to keep people engaged here. So I knew I was holding them from happy hour. So why fight it, you know?
Actually, just on that, just for context, for folks listening, if you're not familiar, I mean, I know you've posted a little bit about it on LinkedIn and stuff. You had the unenviable job, if I can get that word out, of, as you say, taking the keynote at 4 p.m. at DemoFestX in London. Bearing in mind that, as you say, you're holding people from happy hour.
Yeah.
Like, what was your mind? I'm just curious, before we kind of get into the mirror, what was your mindset about like going into that presentation?
So that one was super interesting, right? Because when I'm preparing for any presentation, there's sort of two things that I'm asking myself. One is, what's the outcome I want? And by outcome, I mean outcome for me, but also outcome for the prospect. And then what is the feeling that I want to give? And I thought about it and I'm thinking, all right, so these people are here. They show up from all over the world. They're there to network and learn and get better. But think about the demographic at this event. They're pre-sales people, which typically they're nice people, but a lot of times they're not salespeople, right? So they're not the ones that are going out and networking, inviting themselves into new conversations, like interrupting people, that kind of thing. So in my mind, I was thinking the number one thing I can give to them is an opportunity, a forced opportunity to network with other people. Because, you know, the hardest thing is making that intro. So me going into that, I was thinking, how can I teach them something, but also put them into an environment where they meet someone new? And so I did that with the session. I said, how can I go and get people in these groups? And I did breakouts and that kind of thing. But I'll tell you a story, man. It was hilarious. So it was the 4 o'clock session. I knew they weren't going to remember almost anything that I said, but they would remember the experience and hopefully they'd meet one new person. So we do the session at 4 o'clock. I walk out. It's like probably 5:30 out in the networking hour, right? Because I had to do some like cleanup stuff. And there's two guys that are just chatting and I'm networking, right? So I'm just going around introducing myself to people. And they're sitting here talking to each other like absolute best friends. I was like, oh, so how long you guys been working together? And they go, oh, we just met each other in your session. You've got to be kidding me. I swear to God, because I had talked to, just before that, there were two other folks that I saw that had worked with each other for like 8 to 10 years or something. So they're like completing each other's sentences. This group, these two guys, it was as if they knew each other forever. And it's just the way they kind of set up that thing. So that was really what I was going for. But yeah, if it's a 9 a.m. session, Paul, I'm going to deliver awesome content that's a play-by-play on how to do better discovery or tell better stories or whatever it is. At 4 o'clock, nobody has an attention span for that. So you got to create that experience, that feeling.
Yeah, I love that. I love that thing of like acknowledging it. And it's true for so many presentations. And I think we could all do with remembering it, which is they will probably not remember what I've actually told them, but they'll remember how I made them feel. And I think that's just like, that's it, right? That's the thing. And if you can nail that, that's what matters. So like, and there we go.
Yeah.
So that's great. I love that story. And I love that. There you go. It's one of those things. It's like, and again, for you, like what sticks in your mind is that, hey, there's these two guys who were getting on like a house on fire who had never met before.
Yeah.
And wild. Happened. So that's awesome. That's awesome. So no, I love it. But I think like that was kind of quite a unique thing for you. And I guess and it's maybe just before we kind of dive a little bit more into your story, it'd be interesting for folks that aren't familiar with you and what you do to maybe hear a little bit more about Alpha and kind of you know, your journey since you started, I think almost exactly 2 years ago. And I think like I came across as a remote first trainer with a very memorable style. I think the first session I ever joined of yours was a remote session and you were using your lightboard. And I think half the conversation in the chat was, how the hell is you doing that?
So like, pretty some
people obviously being obsessed with it. But like for you, I think what's interesting is where a lot of the stuff you do is remote and remote first and obviously bringing on teams on that way. Is it a completely different approach for you going and doing it live in front of 400 people to when you're doing it remote? Or are you sort of going out there with the same mindset of, as you say, I have to engage them, I have to give them a good experience, I have to leave them with a feeling and a lesson? Is that the same, or is there a divergent route that you find?
Yeah, no, it's there's some similarities and some differences. So let's break it down. So a 4 p.m. session, when I'm the one right before happy hour, it is the intent is to give them someone to network with in that and have them have a good feeling there. If I am the first if I'm the first session in a virtual event, I'll give them plenty of how-tos, actionable sales advice, tips, playbooks, whatever it is. Because the outcome I want to deliver is I want you to use what I teach you so that selfishly you remember me and you're going to continue to use these things and keep coming back for more. Because I do believe that I can provide a ton of value to sales engineers and sales reps. I've done the job of both. I was very successful at both of them. But you can't walk in with just trying to create an experience and not actually giving anything. So yeah. That's why I'm actually going for giving something, right? So that's a virtual, like, large session. But then when you look at it in terms of my training, like, at that point, I'm not looking to entertain in my training. Mm-hmm. Those are usually cohorts of 9 to 12 people in a Zoom or in person. Maybe it's a QBR or breakout I do for a team. And that, the goal isn't entertainment. Now, it ends up being entertaining, but the goal is to deliver value so that they get better at their job. So you got to think of, like, why do people show up to here? What are they hoping to get out of it? At DemoFest, they were looking to get a really good experience, a networking opportunity, and learn some things. They had 7 hours to learn some things beforehand. So that's fine. I'm looking at it as, what are they looking to get and what isn't being delivered by the other folks that are involved? And so, yeah, that's how I'll approach a virtual versus a live kind of in-person event a little bit differently. But it's still focused on the same things. What's the outcome? What's the feeling if it's like a trade show thing?
No, I like that, and that's a good distinction. And the word that you used, right, is value. Like, what's the value going to be to them? What's the outcome? Like, every engagement's different to a greater or lesser degree, but also every engagement is the same in that everyone shows up to training. Why, you know, people show up to training generally because they're either interested in learning something or because their managers told them, you've got to go to this training. And they're thinking,
yeah,
I don't want to be here. And in DemoFest, like you say, they're showing up because they want to network, because they want to learn, because they want to meet people. But all of those things are a value add, as you say. Like, we're all selfishly turning up to get something back for ourselves, whatever that is. And yeah, so the approach is like, you kind of, the actual approach is like similar, the kind of the actual outcomes, the outputs will be slightly different. You're not, as you say, you're not looking to take a solid, here's how you can go and tell a better story and better focus on value selling. You aren't going to learn that, as you say, at 4 p.m. at DemoFest. But equally, you're still looking to get something out of it. And I think, yeah, as you say, if you can nail what that value is for those individuals or that person you're speaking to, that's it, right? And I think that's, I love it. But you mentioned it there, right? And I know that this is kind of like when we spoke before, I think this is the thing that I find really interesting is you've done the thing that a lot of SEs, a lot of people in solutions think about doing. I thought about doing it and never did, which is that you went from being an SE, being the technical salesperson, right? The techie in the room, all of those misnomers that we use. You went over to being in a quota carrying sales role. Like, I'm kind of interested, what was it that kind of made you make that decision? Or was there like a point where you went, hey, I'm definitely going to do this? Or was it a journey that you kind of went on through being an SE to switching to being an AE?
Yeah, it's funny. You get this question. I was just looking at a LinkedIn post earlier today and someone said, oh, I did this thing to help grow an account from like $20,000 to like $500,000 or something. And I'm just reading it like, this is such BS. It's not one thing. It's like 10 things that you do. Because sales, it's more than 10 things, actually. It's probably 80. Because those are all the little things that contribute to the success of a deal. And I'll be honest, my journey from sales engineering and into sales was a number of things. So I'll maybe break down some of the important ones, especially like within the vein of, you know, how is this helpful for someone who's actually evaluating it, that move. So for me, I've always had sort of a sales background and started off doing engineering. I moved into consulting, liked consulting, but consulting, you do a lot of delivery work. And I was working at Deloitte at the time. I didn't want to wait 8 years before I hit senior manager or partner to be a salesperson. And to me, I'm like, I got to get into sales. I ended up moving into sales engineering, which was kind of, you know, a step in the right direction towards sales. And being an SE is awesome. So if you're looking at sales versus sales engineering, they really are completely different roles. They have similar skill sets in some regards, but just the work is so different. What got me interested was, let's be honest, the money for sure. I also have a sort of behavioral style where I want to learn, I want to grow, and I do like to be out and lead. I'm very strategic in that regard. Like, I've always been a leader. I was captain of my lacrosse team. I was always I was a Hokie ambassador. I was a tour guide in college. I tend to lead in front of a group like that, and I enjoy it. I'll sit back and relax when I need to, but I do like to be out in front and kind of leading and setting strategy. And that's a great place. If you want to be a sales rep, you definitely need to be strong with that. There's other folks that don't want to do that. They'd rather, you know, be the co-pilot to the sales rep. And so for me, I kind of wanted that opportunity. So that's part of the reason why I made that jump. Now, when you make the jump, that's what's crazy, is it's just completely different. As a sales engineer, you're doing, you know, I say sales engineers do more sales than sales reps do. And I truly mean that, because you're the one pitching. You're the one going and giving the presentations. You're the one who's ultimately convincing, I'm using air quotes here, convincing the client to move to the next step because they've seen the value in the product. As a sales rep, you're doing a lot of BS work orchestrating that whole process so that the SE is set up to be convinced or to be shown or to be proven that this is the right solution. So you're the lead when it comes to the strategy, but when I was doing sales, you're kind of this back seat to, I'm letting the SE shine in that regard. So I moved because of the money and because of the control. And I really, really liked sales because of that, because you are in a lot more control than the sales engineer is. So if that's what you want, great. But if you want just the big paycheck and better work-life balance, you're not going to get that in sales. And you're going to do a whole lot more busy work.
It's interesting. And I think that's a really nice articulation, actually. And the question that comes to my mind, I don't think I've ever told the story in the podcast. I think I might have told you before. But I was offered a enterprise account exec position in like February of 2020. Not knowing kind of what was ahead, and it was a very strange experience. But at the time, a VP of sales sat me down and was like, I want you to come and work for me. And he sort of, you know, dangles the shiny things in front of you, dangles the pot of gold. Mm-hmm. Says, hey, here's how much you're going to, like, overnight, you're going to, like, earn 50% more, and here's your OTE. And I'm like, okay, that's, like, attractive. And you think, okay, right, fine. And I was drawn to it for a lot of the reasons you articulated there, which is that leadership, that kind of enablement, going out, being strategic, being kind of creative in what you do, having the freedom to like be more picky, honestly picky, but like be more selective about how you spend your time. But in the end, I didn't, spoiler, but I actually ended up, that was going down the SE leadership route. That was the first time I then went and set out on a management track. And I guess what I'm curious about is, was there a point for you when you were looking at making that transition, when you're thinking, you know, I'm charismatic, I like to lead, I like to set strategy, I like to kind of help pull a team forward to success, was there a point when you considered going down, like, being a people leader? Or were you always thinking, you know what, sales is actually going to be my like fast track to get into that position?
Yeah, no, that's another good question that people are noodling on. So I'll give you my answer. I had already led people at Deloitte. So I would manage, and I enjoyed it. I loved it, actually. And that is truly that's what I'm passionate about. Probably more so than sales, to be honest. But when I took a look at my career, I was thinking to myself, the area that I can grow the most right now is in my sales abilities. I already had the management. I already led. I had been a people leader. I've done that before. Mm-hmm. But then I said, I haven't done straight sales. And everyone will tell you sales engineering is sales. It's not. You don't have to pick up the phone and get yelled at or punched in the face. You don't have to go and show up and wake up every day and realize that the reason why the paycheck isn't coming in has nothing to do with anybody except for yourself. Like, there is a certain liberating feeling of being a sales rep where you wake up and you're not making money and there's no one to blame except for yourself. And it's really hard to do that in a sales engineering and a consulting position in other areas. So that's actually really cool. Call me a masochist. I don't know. It's just, it's great to be able to have that. Now, since I had already done the management thing, I said, all right, I'm going to get more of that. I knew I needed to get better at that. But the area that I could improve the most was sales. And I said, if I don't do it now, I'm not going to do it. And so that's why I went into sales. But I mean, now I lead people, right? So I'm back at it. That's where you got to look at such a thing as the right thing at the right time. Sales engineering leadership, maybe it could have been the right thing, but it wasn't the right time. The time when I made that move was ripe for sales.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think I like that. And to be fair, I didn't know the context that you'd done the people leadership thing. So that's kind of super interesting. And I think I'm the right thing at the right time, and I'm 100% on board with that. And long-term listeners will know, and I've shared this enough on LinkedIn, like, I went into being in leadership. I then went back to being an IC. I then have gone back to being in leadership, and now I'm back to being currently an IC, but with the goal that I'm going to be building out a team. So I think it's super interesting because I resonate a lot with that. Like, I've done this thing. I now need to go and improve on this thing.
Yeah.
And how do I fast track my learning? How do I put myself in a position to learn more?
Yeah.
So yeah, that resonates a lot.
Yeah. You got to look at where you want to go to and think of it as multiple steps. I mean, I tell people, I'm a big fan of look at 2 years out and look at 20 years out and where you want to be rather than this, like, oh, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Like, I don't know. It's too vague to me. What's the immediate next step you can go and take?
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, I need to get really good at sales skills. And then, you know, 10 years down the line, I'm sure I'm not going to be selling stuff. I'm going to be managing a team. So you'll get there.
I like that. I like that. 2 and 20. And I think it's funny because a good friend of mine said to me a long time ago, he said the most influential thing a manager had told him, like, in his career, it was 2 up and 2 out or 2 out. And it's like every 2 years, you need to either be moving on to something new or you need to be moving somewhere different. And it's like, it's not every 2 years you should up and quit your job or you should leave, or necessarily even every 2 years that if you go, oh, I haven't been promoted for 2 years. It's not that. It's that, are you doing something now tangibly different, or how are you progressing, right? And because 2 years is enough time to get into a new thing, get arms around it, understand if it's for you or not. But also, I mean, actually, realistically, you can do that within inside of a year, but then you then have another year to go, do I want to continue down this path, or do I want to go and do something different? And you know what, like, being in solutions and being an SE, one of the best things that anyone in this career will tell you who's been in it for any amount of time is that it can kind of send you anywhere. You can go into sales, you can go into product, you can go and be an entrepreneur, you can go and do this, you can go into leadership, you can come out of leadership. You don't have to be on this one track.
Yeah.
And again, that's like one of the things. So I love that. That's really, really cool. Like, did you find, having come from being an SE, did that inform how you went about being an AE and how you interacted with SEs when you were in that
room? Yeah, without a doubt. Where do I begin with this question? So I did recognize that as an SE, you are more influential to the decision or to the selling process. Let me phrase this a little differently. The SE is extremely influential to the customer's decision on who to choose. That doesn't mean the SE is more important or more influential than the salesperson, because the salesperson has to set the SE up. And I think there's a lot more strategy than folks even are aware of. So if the sales rep doesn't do the proper qualification, doesn't get the right people in the room, and doesn't set up their SC with discovery calls so that the SC feels confident and secure in the meeting, you're going to lose that deal. It doesn't matter how good your SC is. So there's a certain degree to which you're at the mercy of the AE. So the AE is an incredibly strategic role. But I realized that my best deals when I was a sales engineer were when I felt comfortable and was given the right amount of time to deliver value to the client. So, you know, you get a lot of AEs that'll go and say, well, we don't need to do discovery because I already did discovery. And what they don't understand is that it doesn't really matter if you've done discovery or not. When you just tell the SC that this is what they want to see, the SC walks into the meeting and you're trying to meet someone for the first time, you're trying to build rapport, and you're trying to show them something that's valuable. But the client doesn't really trust you that much, except for the fact that you have this title. So half the time, the reason I'd set up these discovery calls for SEs to hear the exact same thing that I just learned as the AE is so that it wasn't the first time they've met the client. So that really informed, like, I would always go and make sure my SE was with me and had met the client before they had to just go and demo to the client. Because when you have to do that, it's just way less effective. So there's so many different ways, but I definitely think, like, as a sales rep, your job, it's the same job as a manager. It's to help the other people around you shine. It's to remove all the barriers that are going to stop the SE from doing the absolute best job. And if you don't do that, you get problems, because there's a lot of SEs that just, they overexplain everything. They don't ask enough questions. They're nervous. They go and get a question and it takes them 10 minutes to answer the thing. And if you don't set them up properly beforehand, they're going to do that. And then that's your deal that's lost. So my view of a great AE and how I liked to lead as an AE was, how do I set my SE up so that they are the most influential, credible, successful person in the sales process, so that the client just wants more of them? Because if I can do that, I know that we're going to deliver the best outcome for the client and we're going to win the deal. So my view is, I'm enabling my SC, not my SC works for me. I work for my SC.
Mic drop. There you go.
Same goes through for CS, man. Same goes through for CS and partners, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love it, right? And I think it's a really... I love that perspective on it. And I'm kind of curious, you mentioned actually there just kind of like discovery and the importance of discovery. Something I literally just posted about the day that we're talking, like a few hours ago, is in this year, in 2025, can we stop saying no disco, no demo? Now,
yeah, seriously.
To give some context to that, right? And I hold my hand up as someone who did that, right, in my career. I think anyone who's been in pre-sales for any amount of time will have said it. No discovery, no demo. The kind of, and there's just two things behind it, and I want to hook it onto one of the particular thing you said about, you know, the AEs, that you're there to enable your SE to shine. The point I'm kind of making there is not that we shouldn't do discovery. Absolutely, we should do discovery. Of course, right? It's a process. You don't show up. If someone's showing up to me and going, we've done discovery, I'm like, okay, you've done some discovery. That's good. We now have more to learn. If you ever say, and this is AE, SE, discovery is complete, that is an instant red flag, because discovery is never complete, right? Same into CS, into customer success. There's always still more to learn. But the point I was kind of making by saying, as an SE, you shouldn't be saying no disco, no demo, is because you should be able to work with the AE to say, you've done discovery, you've met the customer, you've met the client. Send me the link for CRM. Tell me what they do. Have a briefing call. Get the SDR on, right? They were the first person to get on and do that. They've spoken to them. They've had them on the phone. They've probably been going after them for 6 months, trying to get this person down. They've been after by LinkedIn, by phone, by email. Go and use an AI model, right, of your choice. Do some your own research. But I think the role I see, and what struck me, is that, like, for the AE, your role then is to enable and to give that information over to the SE. So if you're doing that discovery, if you're capturing that, great. But you need to then pass it across to the SE. But SEs, then you can't be sitting there going, no discovery, no demo, because all you're then doing in my eyes, is you're putting another call in someone's calendar and they're going, I've already answered these questions. So I'm just curious, because you said, like, as an AE, like, your thing was you wanted to hear the same, your SE to hear the same responses that you did. Is that something you'd still do now? Or is that something you think you do differently?
No, I 100%. Look, there's, as long as what you don't want to do, you always put the client first. So you put the client first. And what I will do is I will set expectations with the client. Hey, I think it would be helpful for you to go and meet with Paul. He'll just ask you a few different questions to better understand your use case so that when we come back and show you something, it's relevant to your needs. Does that work for you? And usually they'll take you up on it. Now, maybe they'll go and say, no, we don't need to do that. We don't have time for that. Fine. Now I can go back to Paul and say, Paul, I asked for the call. They said no. This is what I think. And now you're more open to it. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
no, I like that.
Yeah, you've got to make the ask. There's a lot of AEs that I know just never asked for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, you know, they're moving really quickly. And the truth is, you forget about this. Like, I've even done it before where I've been able to move. I'm thinking, oh, we got to move on to demo. And I completely forgot about the SE discovery call. And I've been an SE. So, you know, AEs that haven't been are going to forget that.
I'll be honest, I forgot about it as an SE. Like, if you get something and you think it's a really great opportunity in a customer that you know you've been after for a long time, you're like, you're excited about your product and you want to jump into, it's the same instinct, I think, that is like, that drives that, like the behavior of an SE to like show everything because you're excited.
Yeah.
But actually you need to kind of go in with, you have to get, the better informed you are, the better you're going to be able to have that conversation. But also, like, as you say, you can always ask, but then I think it's then going, if that isn't happening, like, as an SE, don't then just shut the conversation down. Go and, you know, engage and work with, as you say, it's like that AE is there. They want you to succeed, to your point. If, you know, I've seen this a few times, like, a good demo isn't going to close a deal necessarily. But a bad demo can absolutely lose it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, just to give you some perspective here, I asked, after I left sales, I went back to a few of my clients and I asked them, and I recommend everybody do this. As a sales rep or a sales engineer, go back to your clients and say, could you give me feedback? I'm doing a training here. Could you please give me feedback and answer these three questions? One is, what do I do really well? What do I not do really well? And what am I world-class, like best in the world at? And I went back and I asked several of my clients this. I also asked them things like, how come you bought this product? And you just get feedback, right? Because now that you're out of the role, you can actually get honest feedback from them. But I talked to one of my clients, he's a CTO, and I said, hey, like, what did you enjoy about working with me? And he said, you're the best sales rep I ever worked with. And I said, what did I do differently? He said, you brought me great people. And it was my SE and my CS leader that I would go and bring to him. So it had nothing to do with me, right? I just listened and I put the right people into the meetings at the right time. Because as a sales rep, that's your job, right? Like, you're not the expert anymore. The other folks around you are. But as an SE, now that's on you to make sure that you're set up for that position. This no disco, no demo thing is fine if you want no one to ever respect you and you want to continue to be called a technical resource. But that's exactly what a technical resource would say. They'd say no disco, no demo. I only follow rules and I'm not here to sell. I'm here to follow the rules. In which case, great. I'm going to treat you like a technical resource. I'm not going to give you what you want. This is not a partnership. Don't complain to me when you don't get promoted or advanced because nobody wants to work with you.
Yeah, and I think that's really key. And I think, you know, there's so much about the kind of in the conversation, I suppose, like as we come towards the end of our time, like what I'd be interested to hear your perspective on is someone who's, you know, you've done both these roles, you've been around this for some time, you're working with sales teams all the time at many different companies. This, like, convergence, the evolution, call it what you like, of the sales, right? This we've had this shift of, like, we've gone from pre-sales to solutions, sales to GTM. It is this kind of, you know, we love to have an acronym and a different name. And I think it's a really, because we're kind of in this, like, we're not really sure what we should be called anymore. But this, like, I suppose the evolution of like the traditional AE SE roles, you know, the traditional of the person who was doing the selling and the person who was the technical, that is now crossing over, going back. There's a whole load of stuff that we could get into around that. For me, my current sort of bete noir is compensation and how that will influence, but that probably for another time. But what I guess I'm curious about is your take on that evolution and if it is really happening or if it's just kind of a bit of a LinkedIn bubble, and whether or not it is happening, kind of why you think that conversation is taking place right now, as we go into 2025, as we come up to the 5 years since this kind of world-changing event when pre-sales sort of exploded as a profession in a good way. Yeah, like that kind of whole thing. So your take on the evolution, if it's even a thing, and why you think that's happening.
We could talk about that one all day. This topic is a tough one. Let's break down what I see happening. So bear in mind, I work with highly technical sales teams. So where the SE has to be significantly involved in the sales process. I'm not an expert in turnkey. AE does most of the selling. He does most of the pitching. That's foreign to me. I was never doing demos as an AE, even though I could demo probably better than most of my SEs because I had been there for way longer, not because I was better, but like I knew the product better and I was a software engineer prior
and I knew
how to do demos. Like I was more technical than most of my SEs. Like I could be doing that job, but I know that's not my job anymore. My job is to go and open up new doors and get the right people in the room. So let's talk about the actual, like, what's really going on with the evolution. The biggest difference is there are more companies that are doing more consumption-based selling. So, right, you sell the initial deal, and then you know, it's companies like Snowflake or MongoDB or Datadog or whoever, right? They're consumption-based businesses. So you sell arguably a $0 contract, and then you just get the customer to start using stuff. Now, the good thing about that is when it's expansion or consumption, it's not as difficult to open up doors because the customer's already a client. So that's where you can go and see the SE role being more of expanding, growing existing accounts. And that's why they went and got rid of customer success, because there's got to be people there that need to go and sell. In the traditional one where you have a $250,000 deal, you still have the SE and the AE. And I don't know that they're really converging that much. I mean, how long has Gartner been going and saying that people don't want to talk to salespeople? How much more research is a customer going to go and do? How much more research is a customer going to be able to do? They're still going to have to talk to sales engineers. So, yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of stuff is changing without a doubt. Mm-hmm. This consumption thing is very different for most companies. The SE skill set has to change. They have to get better at sales skills and they got to get better at technical skills. The AEs, they've got to go and learn more of the product, because you can't just go and take people out for fancy dinners and lunches and playing golf anymore. So things are changing, but I don't know. I think there's just a lot of talk on LinkedIn about it. Frankly, I don't love getting involved in the conversation because I don't find it being productive talking about it. I'd rather teach people how to sell better. That's what I do. If you follow my content, that's what I'm talking about. It's like, this is how you do better discovery. This is how you tell better stories. This is how you make the client feel more comfortable with you. Not this is the organizational model that makes sense. Yeah, it's a little frustrating to me. I'm venting a little bit here, Paul.
You vent away. It's good. It's good. And I think, as you say, we could get into it. But I think it's conversations like this that I think need to be had, because it's the conversation that I don't think is necessarily going on. And it's not to for any, you know, and I'm not to speak for you, but I know for me, this isn't about dunking on like individual ways of looking at it. But I think it's just for me kind of starting to like peel back that onion a little bit and be like, okay, yes, I see that. The other thing I see is a divergence of like pre-sales roles, right? Which is you don't just have the single, like the way that Lydia has captured it in the past, like the pre-sales bot, right, that can answer every question perfectly, because everyone, what makes a great SE is that you're unique and you bring yourself, but that SE function is diverging into solution like true solution architecture or enterprise architecture or value engineering, right, or solutions consulting, which are, when you're dealing with more complex products, as I've dealt with as well, they become in their own right different functions, because as you expand the size of the opportunity and the people that you're working with, you need to have people who are, which is to a point, who are good salespeople but super technical, who are understand what the product does but also understand how is it going to impact your customer's business, how is it going to move the needle when they have to go, you know, and particularly in a renewal subscription based world, when they go in 6-12 months after go live and they go to their board and say, we're spending $1 million on this product, the board's gonna go, okay, well, show me where we've saved 10 million. And I think it's actually, like, it's not that, you know, this conversation about the convergence and the changing and the evolution. Yeah, you know, SEAE roles, they're not what they were when I first got into it, even 5 years ago. Right, they aren't, because the world's changed. But yeah, I think, you know, you're right to say that it's not that it's just all overnight going to suddenly change. We still will need to have these different roles. And because the people will be different as well, right? We're not changing.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of companies, right? Like, your company is going to go and change a lot over time. That's where people are going to think there's this sudden huge change, but really any growing company is going to go through this evolution. They're going to go and say, well, we have full cycle AEs, and then you're going to go and hire SDRs to go and do some of the outbound stuff. And then maybe you're going to go and start having specialists. And then you're going to realize, oh my gosh, we're showing up with 10 people on our sales team to every call. This doesn't make a lot of sense. Maybe we should combine solution architecture and sales engineering and try to find the first. And so you just go through these waves and back and forth. But people think it's like one thing. A 200-person company is very different from a 1,000-person company, is very different from a 5,000-person company. So I think we're just talking about it on LinkedIn, and we're kind of talking past each other, where, look, there's no right answer. And if you try to figure it out, it goes back to what I said in the beginning. It's the right place or the right thing at the right time. The time is really important. The time is different for the size of your organization.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. And I think that's it. Right. And I'm ending every conversation with this right now, which is, it's our two favorite words in this career, which is, it depends.
I hate those words, but they're applicable. So, you're right.
So do I. But yeah, it's like, you know, that thing of going, all those examples, if you were a 50-person company, 150, 1,500, 15,000, all of those are going to influence, right? So
yeah,
there we are. Ending on like, a phrase that I think we both have an equal loathing for, but unfortunately it's true at the same
time. Hey, I don't mind it in most things. I just don't like it in sales context. It's usually a lazy
Fair
answer.
Enough. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It
if you're in
is.
Sales, tell them why it depends, you know, like, and give a recommendation here. That's it.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, Roo, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Yeah. As you said, there are things that we could have gone into. How can people connect with you if they want to hear more about what you do, kind of consume some of your, I mean, Roo's content is great, and I say that sincerely. Where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, LinkedIn. That's basically my only channel there. So just go LinkedIn, and then occasionally you'll find some stuff, links out to YouTube and that kind of thing. But follow that. You'll get plenty of good content. I'll help you get better. It's my journey in sales, and it's even excerpts from some of the training I do all over.
Thanks so much, Roo. Really appreciate it. So that was Roo. Roo, as I'm sure you'll agree, is a very engaging and absolutely fascinating person to speak to. As you probably tell, we could have talked for a lot longer, and no doubt we'll endeavour to have him back on the show at some point in the future. I think re-listening to the conversation a few months after it was initially recorded
The one thing that really stuck out to me was his commentary around how the size of companies really impacts the decisions they make in a way that we don't often consider. It can be very easy in little bubbles that we sit in our little conversations about the direction the role is taking and how we're changing things, to really see everything through our own lens. It's a helpful reminder that different companies selling different products and different license models really do have different approaches, and pointing to one or two specific examples as being a marker of a bigger trend is not necessarily going to be the case. In fact, it might just be an outlier, or in the case of some companies, be something that they are uniquely positioned to do, given their size, their market dominance, or indeed just the willingness of their leadership to take a risk. Either way, there's a lot of stuff in here that really is worth considering, and as someone who made a conscious decision 5 years ago to not go into a direct sales role, it gave me a lot to think about. But I hope you enjoy the conversation, and thanks again to Rue for joining me. So I promised you at the start of the episode that there'd be a little bit more of an update around where we're going with the podcast this year. We launched the podcast just over a year ago, and honestly, we're quite overwhelmed by the reception. Some of the conversations I've had have been really great, and it's great to know that people have gotten value out of it. As you'll know, if you've been watching us on LinkedIn, both Lydia and I have changed jobs. Lydia has started a new full-time role, and I've stepped into a new role running value engineering. What this has meant is, alongside the normal chaos at the start of the year, is that we've been rather busy. And we've just kind of had to put things like the podcast on hold for a bit. The good news, though, is that things are settling into a routine, and we've had some good conversations about the direction we want to take the show moving forwards. We're going to continue to be putting out interviews, probably in this kind of format, and we'll be interspersed with conversations between Lydia and I around tech, trends, our lives, and how that really intersects with what we do. In some ways, the fact that we named this show the Wandering Tech Podcast gave us license to, well, wander about. Something which I've taken literally with this wraparound recording. It's been great doing this show for the time that we have, and we're excited to get back into it, albeit in a slightly different world. Until then, enjoy the fact that winter does seem to be coming to an end. As I walk now, there's blossom on the trees and there's bulbs emerging out the ground. Thank you for listening. This has been the Wandering Tech Podcast. Check out our newsletter, discoverydigest.substack.com, and do connect with Lydia and I on LinkedIn. Lydia Vasileva and Paul Harris. And follow the Wandering Tech Podcast for more updates and more news about episodes in the future.